Good afternoon.
Let me see.
Okay, our next and last case on docket today is case number 62907 Xiao Ye Bai versus the state of Nevada. I'm sorry if I butchered that name, but I gave it my best. Are you ready to proceed, Mr. Langford?
I am, Your Honor.
Okay.
My name is Robert Langford with the law firm of Langford McClutchy. On behalf of the appellant, may it please the court.
Could you do me a favor right off the bat, Mr. Langford?
Yes, sir.
There's 15 issues. Which one are we going to really look at during this half-hour episode?
Do I only get one, Your Honor?
Of the 15.
Okay.
No, as many. How many should we really be looking at of the 15?
I anticipate three or four, Your Honor. First was the motion to continue that was denied by the court. That was such a critical thing. We came into the knowledge of having the ability to get Mr. Bai's father to come testify. And he was a two-pronged witness. First, he was the witness that would establish clearly that there was a debt owed to him by the decedent in this case, and that was the animosity between my client and the decedent. That was the source of it. And as the court is aware, later on all we heard about was this was all Chinese triad, United Bamboo. I almost said Big Bamboo, which I almost did every time we talked about it in court. United Bamboo, Chinese gangs, hitman, assassin, all of those things. We needed him to establish it was none of those things, that it was just he was there trying to collect a debt on behalf of his father, confronted with a more dangerous man in the decedent, as we've outlined in our brief. We came upon that knowledge literally on the eve of trial. I filed a reconsideration of the court outlining more specifically why he was necessary, particularly in the penalty phase. And then on the same exact day, the day we're supposed to start picking a jury, we get hit with the fact that the co-defendant in the case, Ms. Peiwei, was going to enter a plea that day, that morning, the morning we're starting to pick a jury, and that she had entered into an agreement to testify. It threw us into a tailspin. So now we've lost one of our main witnesses because the court has denied our motion to continue, as well as we have to retrack our thinking about where our case is going. We don't really know what she's going to say. There were representations that, well, she's just going to say things consistent with other things that have been said.
I mean, with regard to the father and the continuance in, as it pertains to him, the state has indicated there was another witness available to testify to the death that was an issue. How do you respond to that?
I respond that that person was not as good as the father. And again, the father was a twofold or a two-prong witness, both in the guilt phase and in the penalty phase. And, you know, it, especially where there's allegations that this is actually about a gang hitman or a gang assassination, having the best witness there is so critically important. You know, they go in their brief and they start talking about overwhelming evidence. Well, it was overwhelming evidence because we couldn't, arguably, on their side, overwhelming evidence, because we couldn't get our best witness in, which is the father. He was absolutely willing to come in. He would pay his way to come in. We had I'm sorry, you have a question?
Yeah, I just had one more question. What kind of a continuance were you looking for, and was there any guarantee he was going to get a travel visa at all?
No. Like anything else in the law, and I've told my clients for 20-something years.
How long do you keep continuing
90 days.
This?
We asked only for 90 days.
But counsel, we had 3 years.
We were unable. He was residing at that point, Your Honor, in mainland China. He had gone back to mainland China. There was no official way for us to locate him. Sometimes when you have witnesses that are out of the country, you can contact the local constabulary, and they are cooperative. As the court might imagine, Communist China was not about to do our business and go look for someone, even though it involved someone from their country. They just wouldn't cooperate. So we were forced, again, we were also forced because we couldn't get the funds to go to mainland China ourselves to look for those. Quite honestly, that would have been a nightmare in and of itself as well. So we were relying upon friends, neighbors, family members to try to locate, and we finally did. I think the court made a record saying that it wasn't anything that the defense did to delay getting that witness. It was a circumstance that was beyond our ability to change. So it wasn't that we were trying to delay it. We were asking for 30 days. And to address more specifically what was the guarantee, none. But we had consulted with Peter Ashman, who is one of the foremost immigration lawyers in town, and he indicated that he didn't see any roadblocks to having the person come in from mainland China, getting a visa for the purposes of coming over here to testify, and that he thought that all of that could be done within that night, easily done within that 90-day time frame. So we were acting in good faith when we asked for the 90 days, and we believed we would be able to get it.
Were you appointed, or was this a retained case?
We were court-appointed, both Mr. Draskovich and myself. Originally, when I first got onto the case, Mr. Draskovich was not a Rule 250 attorney, and I was. So the Office of Appointed Counsel, we worked through the Office of Appointed Counsel.
Did you have an investigator?
We did, but that investigator could not go over to mainland China.
You know, there was a case called Roberta Miranda where it took federal court and extensive investigation fees to free the man. He was on death row for a while, and he sued the county and won about $5 million. That's because the state was unable to give money for an investigation fee where the federal court did. I'm concerned about the denial of the continuance. So what was the reason that the state opposed it?
The state opposed it because, again, they had said that we'd had 3 years to locate the witness, and that the fact that we just found the witness at that late date didn't justify, and that there were other witnesses that would be able to testify to similar things as to what the father was going to testify to. When you look then at the other issues in the case, that motion to continue becomes more critical because the state then turns this into a gang case. It is worth noting that my client was never charged with the gang enhancement, that the state's theory as you look at the indictment was this is a murder, this is an extortion, this is a criminal extortion. A criminal act to collect a debt. Okay? Never does it say in furtherance of United Bamboo. That would have changed everything about this case. We would have been on notice that all of the gang material was going to come in. We would have been able to focus better on that. We would have been able to do motions in limine that would have hopefully limited what came in. But because they didn't do that, and yet they say in their brief that that is what this case is about. They say in their brief that this case is about an assassination or collecting a debt, an assassination to or United Bamboo. Well, isn't that the definition of in furtherance of the gang? But they don't do that. Why? Because they didn't have enough evidence that this was actually about United Bamboo. Gang evidence in and of itself is so prejudicial. You know, and I hate to say it, but particularly where it comes to Asian gangs, my experience at least is that when we talk about Hispanic gangs, when we talk about African-American gangs, other street gangs that are common in southern Nevada, there's a better understanding, but when you start talking about the Asian street gangs or the United Bamboo, Chinese triads.
Wasn't there a photograph of the defendant.
That was my next argument. Yeah, the photograph of the defendant, though, was very clear. The photograph was of a stupid young man trying to imitate a video game. You know, courts have held that rap lyrics are improper because they can be just fantasy, somebody articulating some fantasy that they had. I would submit to the court that that is exactly what was going on here. I walked into my son's bedroom and there was all sorts of really crazy things. And I was like, why are you putting this up? And he says, well, you know, I'm like, that's not who you are. And he said, no, it's not who I am, but I like looking at it. So I like listening to it. That's what was going on here with Mr. Bai. He thought it was fun, just fun, to put these, you know, the knife, the state admitted that the knife was not, the knife in the photograph, the knife in the photograph was not the knife used in the murder. This isn't about a shooting. No handcuffs were used, and yet all of those things are paraded in front of the jury at the same time they're talking about, because the video was, the video game, Assassin, Hitman, no, I'm sorry, Hitman. Hitman was the video game. And so you combine all of this. Well, it's not really a gang case, but he did it to benefit the gang. And so we're going to talk about the gangs. We're going to bring in a person from Los Angeles who's going to talk about customs and how violent they are, to the point where a juror asks a question about, is it common in the gangs to hold one family member to force another family member to... That wasn't even what this case was about. But that's the level that this kind of prejudicial evidence took the jury to where they're asking those kinds of... It's clear they had what was, they had no idea about the alternate theory of what was going on.
But they had to present their theory, though. I mean, it would be almost malpractice on the part of a district attorney who didn't present this evidence.
But they didn't have, you know, going back to first-year evidence, because I'm a first-year evidence kind of guy, probative versus prejudicial. And in looking at probative, don't you also have to ask, how compelling is it? How is the evidence not just compelling, but is it competent? Is the evidence competent evidence? There was
this was all argued before the court, and the court allowed it in, correct?
Correct.
And isn't that an abuse of discretion standard that would be used to evaluate that determination?
Even if it is, Your Honor. We meet that.
Okay. Let me ask you this. Do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I did not file...
you didn't.
I did not. So it's improper for me to do that.
Mr. Langford, was there a third point you wanted to touch on?
The interpreters. The interpreters in this case struggled and struggled. I think that... And it became clear all along that the interpreters were having issues. And even if that wasn't raised properly, I think the court had a duty to sua sponte at some point. This case was such a nightmare because Chinese is a very complex spoken language. As the evidence came out, the writing is pretty standard post-communist China. The communists came in, that was the testimony, the communists came in, and they simplified the written portion of the language. But verbally, it is very complex, and the interpreter struggled with this. We sat on the jury a person who was a certified court interpreter in Chinese. He's shouting out only 80% is being translated. It was just a nightmare. If this case is done over again, it absolutely needs to be done with hearings up front to discuss the competency of the interpreters to interpret the particular dialect that was being spoken. But when you add all of those things together, questions about whether the interpreters are interpreting correctly, when you add questions about whether the gang evidence coming in, the prejudicial photographs coming in. It just became a steamroller where, lost in all of this, was the victim in this particular case surrounded himself with bodyguards. And our client knew that. There was testimony to that. He had hired professional ex-police officer bodyguards to come in to go around with him, and he was a dangerous man. Testimony that he was involved in high-level ripping off the casinos and had ripped off everybody. Everybody had an edge against him, including his wife. His wife came in and gave cold testimony, did not come in, in fact, to the penalty phase on his behalf. I see that my time is up.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
May it please the Court, my name is Mark DiGiacomo. I'm a Chief Deputy District Attorney, and I represent the State of Nevada in this particular matter. I would like to start to address by the request to continuance as the issue that when I first read the briefs, I thought the Court would want a little bit more discussion about. If you go back to the record, the complete record in this case, the issues for the continuance were, one, the creation of transcripts of some of these, some of the Chinese statements for witnesses who did not even testify, and one for one that did, that they had before trial. The audios of those recordings were turned over in justice court, and for whatever reason, they were not interpreted. The state wasn't seeking to have those interpreted, but prior to the witness's testimony, those transcripts were interpreted. So that becomes a non-issue. The second issue they raised was that defendant Bai's father. And what they essentially say at calendar call was Mr. Bai's father refused to cooperate with us, but eventually his mother was able to convince Mr. Bai's father to cooperate. And what Mr. Bai's father would say is that James Lee, the victim in this case, had taken $10,000 from Mr. Bai when he lived in America, Fei Bai, the father. Lived in America, and that money had never been returned. What they do not mention very brief, or what they mention very briefly in their brief, is that they had an independent witness to this transaction, a Mr. Yong, who did testify at trial and testified to exactly the facts that Mr. Fei Bai would have testified to in the case in chief had Mr. Fei Bai been available. Mr. Bai was in China, outside the jurisdiction of the court, did not have a visa, and they were requesting on a hypothetical, hey, maybe we could get him there. And when you look at the factors that this court has said in Banks and in Lyon, and I would note in both those cases, Banks is a one-day continuance, and Lyon is a half-day continuance, the first requirement is that the witness be necessary, and no other witness can testify to what that witness is going to testify.
So it's your position this would be the father's testimony would be cumulative?
Yes, the father's, at least as it relates to the guilt phase, was cumulative to what Mr. Yong said, and it's more cumulative because of this fact.
And even if he had testified, your theory would have been the same as your presentation as a prosecutor in this matter.
Absolutely, and moreover, as we argued in the case, it really, from a factual predicate as to what crime was committed, whether or not Mr. Bai had the motive to kill him because he took his father off for $10,000, or he killed him because it's, in fact, his job as part of United Bamboo to do so, that testimony of Mr. Bai does not, Fei Bai, does not change the individual facts of the murder itself on that day and on that time. But more importantly, what evidence came out, and this came out more during the penalty phase, but it's relevant to the motion to continue, is Mr. Bai had no relationship with his father after the time period he was a teenager and had no communication with his father. So the fact that James Lee and Mr. Bai may have had some sort of dealings together in 2002, there was no communication between Mr. Bai and his father. So there was no evidence to establish Mr. Bai's, defendant Bai's knowledge of the transaction, and that would be the reason for it.
Lanford indicates that this father was not charged as a gang case, no gang enhancement, but basically was tried as a gang case. How do you respond?
I would respond that it is correct that there was no enhancement for the gang enhancement. However, the underlying facts of the case, and the court did hold a hearing. It held it on November 9th prior to the opening statements of counsel. And the defense did file a motion in limine. They asked to exclude his prior murder in California. They asked to exclude the evidence of the what we call the alleged hit on the prosecution, which we agreed to. And they asked to then exclude all evidence related to the gang, the United Bamboo. And my response to that is this, which is, well, there may not have been a gang enhancement. It would have been irrelevant in this case because there was a deadly weapon enhancement, and thus there was no additional punishment that would have occurred. Mr. Bai's defense was that James Lee was a member of United Bamboo, that he was Brother 2, and that he worked along with Brother 3. And the reason that he feared James Lee was because he was a member of United Bamboo. He was a bad guy. He was a gangster who hired hitmen to kill people. And therefore, that was his basis for self-defense. So even if you excluded everything else, Mr. Bai's own version of events that came in through a letter was that the defendant, or that the victim himself, is a member of United Bamboo and was engaged in this criminal activity. So all of it was going to come into this case either way. Moreover, the evidence established directly that this crime was, in fact, what was the motive of the crime. The evidence all indicated that the motive of the crime was that the victim, James Lee, owed Brother 3, the head of the of United Bamboo here in the United States, a debt, and he failed to pay it. His failure to pay that debt required there to be a consequence, and that Jairie Bai is the enforcement arm of United Bamboo. He acknowledges he's a member of United Bamboo, and that in order to collect that debt, he kidnaps him on May of 2009, and when he fails to do that, he spends the next 60 days looking for him, and ultimately, when he hasn't paid and he's located inside the KTV, Forbes KTV bar, he goes over there to kill him. None of this is 48045 subject evidence. This is just the facts of the case. There is no other act that was being offered. The only thing that could be suggestive of the other act is the FI card of Mr. Bai, which was subject to a hearing prior to the opening statements, in which the court heard all of this and indicated, I do not find these to be collateral evidence. I find this to be evidence directly related to the underlying offense, and I find that there's clear convincing evidence that Mr. Bai is a member because he admits to being a member in November of 2008, some 8 months before the homicide that occurred.
If it's that simple and that straightforward, why is the deputy sheriff from California called as an expert witness?
Well, he's called for an expert witness because he had a specialized knowledge in Asian gangs that the jury would not otherwise have. He was able to testify, one, who is United Bamboo. He was able to establish that Brother 3 is the leader of United Bamboo. He's able to establish that Mr. Bai is a member of United Bamboo. And he was able to establish that Asian gangs utilize not your normal street gang type violence and narcotics and turf war, but that their primary role as an Asian gang is to create money through various forms of fraud, including in this case the fraud perpetrated by both James Lee and Sophia, which involved fraud involving the casinos and the credit cards. He was also able to establish that Mr. Lee's failure to pay Brother 3 money, it would have offended Brother 3, and that Brother 3 would have been required under the culture of the gang to take action, or he would lose face and ultimately someone would take his position. All of which is relevant based upon Mr. Lee owing the money and not offending Jiaoye Bai, but offending Brother 3, and that he was scared of Brother 3 or Jiaoye Bai because Jiaoye Bai worked for Brother 3, all of which was evidence that was admitted in the trial. Absent Detective Yu's testimony as an expert, the jury would have been left with their own understandings of the world, which none of us really understand, that gang world, other than those people that are either experts in it or deal with it on a daily basis. So it was something the jury did not have, and the court made that finding and allowed him to testify.
Mr. Langford raised something about the co-defendant entering a plea, or making the deal? What's the story on that?
The co-defendant was a joint co-defendant. Her defense had always been, I was merely present. I didn't know what the defendant was going to do that night inside Forbes KTV. When we got set for trial, on the morning of trial, she wanted to enter a plea, and she did enter a plea with an agreement to testify. The suggestion in the briefs is that somehow that changed their defense. Well, the truth of the matter is that Ms. Pei was going to have to testify one way or the other, whether she testified from sitting at the defendant's table in her own defense that she was merely present, or she was going to testify after entering a plea agreement. It doesn't change the nature of the evidence that was going to be presented. They certainly had to be prepared at the time that she entered her plea as a co-defendant in the case that she very well may choose to exercise her right and testify.
What did she say?
She essentially corroborates the entire story, which she did provide to the police early on in the investigation, which is, Mr. Bai moves here. I move here afterwards with Mr. Bai. When he first moved here, he lived here at a house rented by Brother 3, that at some point in time he wanted money. We needed money. He told me there was a guy that owed him money. I was with him at the 99 Ranch Market, and that Mr. Bai walked back in and James Lee was with him, and that James Lee wanted money from him. I don't know why he wanted money from him. He certainly never told me that he owed him, that his father owed, or that James had taken money from his father. That he was beating him. We drove across the street to the bank, that Mr. Lee called his wife Moon. She came over. We did go up to the bank. We did try and get money, but the bank was closed, and that Mr. Bai let Mr. Lee leave with an agreement that he'd come back in a couple days and pay the money. And when he didn't pay the money, he asked me, he asked Sophia, he asked Jackie to be on the lookout for Mr. Lee, and if we ever see him, let him know. And in fact, he sent me to various casinos looking for him. And when I didn't find him, a couple of days before the murder, Mr. Brother 3 shows up in town. After that, there is I get a phone call from Mr. Bai saying, hey, you need to drive me down to the Ford's KTV. I drive Mr. Bai down there. He tells me, go in there, look for James Lee. I go in the door. I only go in the door, but I never go through the second set of doors because I know something bad's going to happen and I don't really want to be a part of it. And in fact, that's corroborated by the videotape. She goes through the front door and then almost immediately turns right back out. And there's another set of double doors in the foyer, so she doesn't actually go in the bar completely inside. She comes out. Mr. Bai says, move the car to another location. I do that. Mr. Bai goes inside. The next thing I know, I see Mr. Grohl running out holding his hands. I turn on the car. Mr. Bai jumps in the car, and we drive to the house, and then we go down and take a bus to Brother 3's house. We stay at Brother 3's house. Brother 3 drives me back to Vegas to get my car. I get my car. I drive it back down to Brother 3's house, and then eventually I move my car to another location in L.A., and Mr. Bai and I come back to Las Vegas, where we were ultimately arrested. She laid out the entire sequence of events, which is exactly what she laid out to the police when they took her into custody after the murder. Her defense was, I didn't really know he was going to kill him, and I wasn't really sure what was to happen, but this is all related to Brother 3, United Bamboo, and some conflict between these three individuals, and I'm not really sure what that is, but I know that that's what they're all in an argument about.
The interpreter situation and the juror that was an interpreter that was later dismissed?
Yes. Briefly, the interpreter situation was frustrating for all of us. During the initial witness, Moon, who testified, the wife of James Lee, an interpreter notified Marshall after testimony saying, look, substantially it was all correct, but there were things that were causing confusion to the witness based on the interpreter's interpretation. The judge said, thank you. If you ever notice that again, please raise your hand. And it was during the testimony of Mr. Guo, now the court had instituted a check system. So he had two interpreters up at the witness box. He had an interpreter for Mr. Bai, a standby interpreter to change out every 20 minutes for Mr. Bai. And Mr. Guo is on the stand. And Mr. Guo, on redirect, I'm asking him questions from a transcript. And on that transcript, it says some word that wasn't translated. And I say, you know, to the interpreter, can you translate this? Well, the two interpreters, they start going back and forth, check, 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 check. And the interpreter from Mr. Bai yells out, it's Wan Zeke. And the defendant then yells out, yeah, it's Wan Zeke. And at that point, the juror goes, no, they're saying he's shouting. And at that point, the judge took a break. He had a hearing, asked all the interpreters, look, did the witness say Wan Zeke, or was this something that came from the defendant? Ultimately, the determination was that the juror was actually correct, and at that point he was released, though, because he blurted out in the middle of testimony. There was nothing perfect about the interpreter situation in this case, but the standard is, was the evidence substantial in conformity, or was the interpretation substantially in conformity with the evidence that was presented? And after holding the hearing, the court ultimately made that determination that, yes, there wasn't perfect. The system that was being utilized with the checks and the fact that some spoke Cantonese versus Mandarin versus Fukienese versus the written Chinese language, but at the end of the day, all of it was substantially a correct interpretation. And he went through great pains, and you will see that in the record, great pains to hold a number of hearings in convent, talk to the interpreters and make sure that was happening. There are no more questions.
Just that you both deserve accolades for handling this case. It sounds like it was a real cluster.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Congratulations to both of you.
All right, thank you both. We appreciated the arguments and the briefing on this. This case will stand submitted, and the court will stand in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.